Spiegel and Holmes.
Scott is in Wisconsin, and now Scott is on Spiegel and Holmes. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how you guys doing? Great show. Hey,
you're right.
I got a couple questions. Great show.
You're right.
You covered some of it.
Afternoons on the Score.
But I'm saying it because I'm standing up for Buffalo, damn it. I'm standing up for us.
Okay, then.
Talk about the mafia.
Yeah, Bill's Mafia.
Bill's Mafia.
Yes, is a whole thing. Our newly crowned mob boss, Carmen Vitale. She is the Twitch mob boss. That's who she is. She's sitting in for Spiegs. We are here until 6 o'clock. Mina Kimes is going to join us. Oh, he's the best.
I know.
At 4:25, Mina Kimes is going to join us to talk a little bit more about the Bears and about the NFL. But Carmen covers the league, and there's been a couple of weird things. That was one of them. Sean McDermott, after the game being over, and then the catch that wasn't a catch, but it was an interception thing, went on, and then he gets fired, even though he's won, playoff games in 6 straight years. People feel like the progress is not happening and that this was the best chance that Josh Allen had to win a Super Bowl because there was no Patrick, there was no Lamar. The AFC was wide open for him to run right through, and it didn't happen.
And I never liked that argument either. And I acknowledge that there was an opportunity there, but it's not as if the teams were any worse. Like, the Broncos have the most dominating defense in the league, and the Patriots are very rapidly ascending back to, you know, the days where they haunted the Bills. I don't know. I don't think it's fair. I didn't think it was fair to let Sean McDermott go when that game wasn't his fault. It's not like he got out coached. I understand the change of scenery, and obviously this year has been the year for a change of scenery. When you talk about John Harbaugh, when you talk about Mike Tomlin, when you talk about now Sean McDermott, these are some of the longest tenured head coaches previously that end up now leaving. And I get it. Sometimes you just need a change of scenery and you just need a different dude in charge. But then the weirdest part to me about the Bills situation is then the press conference that Terry Pegula and Brandon Bean have, where they completely throw, first of all, they threw Keon Coleman to the Wolves.
Yeah.
Then a guy that's still on your roster, by the way. And then you just throw Sean McDermott completely under the bus.
Let's take a listen to it.
Basically, when I went to bed that night, I was like, it's Keon unless someone just blows us away. We didn't feel anything was attractive enough for us to pass up on Keon.
All things considered.
All things considered. We're to just get the guy who's feels the best fit.
Yep.
It always might be obvious, but so tomorrow, who are we picking?
We're just going to keep trading more. We're going to get 14 fifths.
Barring someone offering us something stupid, we'll take Keon Coleman there.
So then the owner steps to the dais, and then he's like, oh, yeah, that's what the coach wanted.
That was all Sean. And I'm like, there are receipts. How do you not know there are receipts?
I thought it was a really strange moment. For like, that press conference was weird, and like, that's a guy that's still on your roster,
and
that's a draft pick that's still on your roster,
and it was offered up by Terry Pegula. Brad Bean was all like, he was all ready to answer the question, and then Terry says, "Wait, no, I got this. Let me tell everybody what really happened."
Brandon being a team player and taking advice of his coaching staff, who felt strongly about the player
who's still on your roster and caught a touchdown in a playoff game.
Yeah. I realized there was a lot of issues with Keon.
There are a ton of them.
You don't get to show up late to meetings, which I saw someone say this on Twitter. It's hard. It's hard to show up late to meetings because you are just, your entire day is just, you are shuffled in and out of meeting rooms, of another meeting room, of the weight room, onto practice. The schedule is on every screen in a facility.
Correct.
It is hard to be late. It is hard to not be engaged in, especially when it's your job and you're getting paid millions of dollars to do it. So Keon Coleman is not without blame. He is not without culpability here. but to have the owner and the GM who drafted you, regardless if that was the coach's pick or not, you still acquiesced, Brandon. Just completely drag you through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
I again have not seen anything like that.
So there's that thing that's going on. There's also the Baker versus Stefanski stuff.
Okay. Talk about more hate in the football, less hate in the. I love it. You talk your ish, Baker, because. That did you see Joe Thomas? And I love Joe Thomas. We've talked about how much I love Joe Thomas. But he's like, hey, phones work two ways. And I'm like, not when you're the dude that just got shipped off for, like, very surprisingly, by the way. Like, if he was, like, Baker was clearly caught off guard. That was Baker's villain origin story.
100%.
And
then you hear the stories about, like, Stefanski himself not being at meetings, which it's one thing for a player
right
to not be at a meeting, but for a coach to call a meeting and to not be at the meeting is bizarre. And the fact that it's happened to multiple quarterbacks,
the onus absolutely falls on the coach to then reach out to that player and say, hey dude, this was a hard decision. Like, justify it however you need to, but like, for a guy that was a first overall pick that you had so high hopes for, that took you, by the way, to the postseason at one point, you're owed a phone call. And I absolutely support Baker in holding this grudge. And now, yeah, he gets to, this is going to bring back a rivalry for the Bucks and the Falcons. Do it. And now on top of that, the Bucks now have Zach Robinson as their offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Who Baker is very excited about, by the way.
So there's that thing that's going on. And then there's this weirdness. We all knew that when they got to 17, they were going to 18. And I'm here to tell you that they're going to 20. But Robert Kraft explained why they want to do this. And the way that he uses the English language does make you worry a little bit.
I want to tell you guys, though, we're going to push like the Dickens now to make international more important with us. Every team will go to 18-2, you know, and eliminate one of the preseason games. And every team every year will play one game overseas. And part of the reason is so we can continue to grow the cap and keep our labor happy.
It's so cringy.
It's very cringy and draconian. And
draconian's a great word.
It really, you know,
I need to know, like, is this the guy that's talking to Cardi B in the suite during Patriot games? I need to know if this is what he actually sounds like.
Now, how old is Robert Kraft? 84, maybe. So I get it, like, his the way that he views the world is probably set in stone.
It's different.
And I get it, but the way that he was talking about it sounds like you talk when you're, like, if we were to go to the winter meetings and then have a conversation about ownership versus labor, then I right. would suspect to hear, like, that right. language and that tone. But just sitting there talking about the schedule and then kind of darkly talking about our labor.
It's honestly, it's icky. It makes me feel real icky because we already call these guys owners and it's just not, it's not fun. I don't like the connotation a lot of the time. It's
and the tone. Tanny, can I hear it one more time?
Why? I don't want to hear this again.
No, because the people need to hear the labor out there needs to hear it. See, sometimes it doesn't fire. That's all right. We'll get it.
No, no one needs to hear that again.
Yeah, no our one. Labor.
No.
I want to tell you guys, God. Though, we're going to push like the Dickens
the
now
Dickens.
To make international more important with us. Every team will go to 18-2, you know, and eliminate one of the preseason games. And every team every year will play one game overseas. And part of the reason is so we can continue to grow the cap and keep our labor happy.
Our labor.
I hate it so much.
Hologram Harry inside Carmi's mob is right. There is some Palpatine in there. That definitely sounds like Emperor Palpatine.
Mm.
When you hear that, it's scary. Like, if you heard your boss talk about you.
I'm just picturing now the Kermit meme, the Kermit Emperor meme, where he's just like, do it.
Do it.
The labor. The labor.
Our labor.
I love democracy. I love the Republic.
Honestly, he had the Dickens thing. Maybe Robert Kraft is just a Muppet.
That would be hilarious.
The Muppet Christmas Carol, Dickens. Like, I'm putting it all together.
All of it seems to fit. So there's that weirdness going on. And then we go with like the coaching stuff too. I'd love to know so far, because there's still a couple jobs that are available. Is there one hire, whether it's head coach or coordinator, that you like? From this latest cycle.
Can I go real like hipster with it?
Do it. That's why we have you here, so you can teach us stuff.
I love Danny Smith to Tampa.
Really?
Oh my God, I adore it.
Why?
Because Danny is like football guy, right? Like, he is the most old school, no nonsense. You know, he comes from Pittsburgh. That I don't want to call him a relic, because he's very, very good at his job, and a relic would kind of, the connotation would be that, you know, he's archaic in the way he does things, because he's not. But I just think he fits in there so well, because Tampa is essentially a roster full of football guys. It's a coaching roster full of football guys, and their special teams was a unit that was pretty bad last year. That's my expert analysis. But I love that fit, and I like the personality. As part of the hierarchy of that coaching staff, I think he's going to fit really, really well in Tampa. And I think that is going to pay dividends. I don't think we're giving special teams in general the due that it deserves now that the kickoff rules have changed, now that there is more strategy behind even things like onside kicks. And there is a real benefit to having a great special team strategy, and whether that's setting you up with good field position, or, you know, the hang time that punters now have to allow your guys to get down there fast enough to potentially down the ball. Like, there is so much more strategy now involved in that third phase, and I think you're seeing teams taking it more serious.
The reason that the NFC Championship game is not in LA.
Yes.
Is because of special teams.
It's because of special teams.
They lost three games this year because of special teams. Where you have Sean McVay fire a special teams coordinator in, what, week 15? And be like, we have to do better. Now, unfortunately for the Bears, they got their bleep together for the playoff game. But even inside of that, the punter who had been good all night, he shanked one that, that opened the door for the Bears to come back in the game.
I'm that particular punt, this is an aside, but so you can see the wire of the camera, and I swear it hit the wire, because I don't know what else would have caused it to do that. It was so, again, out of character. It was just so random that he would have shanked a punt like that, where it looked like he got the punt off very cleanly. And I think from my vantage point, because I could see where the light was reflecting on the wire, so I could see the wire really well. I think it hit the wire, but nobody else has said that. So I'm kind of like, all right, maybe I didn't see that. But regardless, my point is that special teams is becoming a phase of the ball that you can't forget about anymore, because it's going to cost you games and potentially going to cost you postseason games and postseason appearances. So I like to see that. Teams are taking it more seriously, and I think it's going to be a good fit there in Tampa. I like what they did, you know, getting Zach Robinson in there, getting Danny Smith. I think that if Todd Bowles is going to fix this, he did a good first job at it.
Can I go back to something that it fits into this motif, but it also is something that we talked about earlier. And I don't think that we made the point, because we were kind of going through all of the guys from Ben's staff that could get poached. The thing that I'm now interested in, because I do think that Ben Johnson did a good job not just hiring people that he knew.
Yeah.
Like that. It wasn't quite a team of rivals, but it was like, let me add a little bit of this and a little bit of this and a little bit of this. Some stuff that's familiar.
Right.
Some guys that I know, but some guys that I don't. The thing about this is that it is frustrating when other teams like raid your cupboard. And I get that. I totally get that. It's also a compliment because they're trying to steal from the success that you've had. I have as much faith as I think I've ever had in a Bears coach to reload.
Yes. Yes.
As I do in Ben Johnson.
Again, for the reason you just said, and that's why I had a lot of optimism too when I saw the staff that he was putting together, where it wasn't just his buddies. It was guys that are going to challenge him. It was guys that had experience. It was guys that he knew he was going to need to lean on. And then he did it, by the way. As a first-time head coach, all of the pressure you're under, all of the pressure to prove yourself and to show everybody that you can make the transition from coordinator to head coach and this, you were the right guy for the job, that can tempt a lot of guys into micromanaging. And that's not something that Ben did. And you have experience that ranges the spectrum between someone really green like Declan Doyle, and then you have a former head coach in Dennis Allen. You have Eric Bieniemy as a running backs coach. You have Al Harris, like all these guys that are worth poaching because you didn't just stick to your own Rolodex. And I think that that is such a key component, but it's also something that's really hard to do, is because you want to bring in the guys that you know because you trust them. But is that, are they always going to complement each other the way that you need them to build a cohesive staff? And I think Ben Johnson learned that, maybe it was from Dan Campbell, and maybe that was even out of necessity because Dan didn't have this crazy Rolodex because he doesn't come from one of the major trees. I mean, he does come from the Sean Payton tree, I guess. But I think that Ben learned a lot from how that staff was put together in Detroit, that he doesn't just need his friends around him. He needs guys that work together well. And who those people are, and he can identify coaching talent, which is why I'm also very optimistic about Declan Doyle and what he turns out to be. I don't know if he's ready yet to jump.
That's fair. I was worried about Mike McDaniel going to Detroit.
Yeah.
Because I felt like it was a good coaching marriage and a good personality marriage. That Mike McDaniel and Dan Campbell, like Mike McDaniel's a little bit out there, and Dan Campbell is not. A little bit out there.
In a lot of ways, he's a lot of it out there, but not in the ways that Mike McDaniel is.
Right. He's very grounded in football.
Yes.
And I feel like that. But the Harbaugh McDaniel thing, I'm kind of like, that could get weird. And maybe not in the best way. It could get weird. Why are you laughing, Alex?
Or maybe it'll be in a great way.
You think it works out?
Yeah, I think it could get very weird.
Yeah.
Like, they're both very weird.
They are both very weird.
In different and totally opposite ways.
Yes. Yes.
If Justin Herbert goes off and this Chargers offense goes off, how much do you want to bet that those Cartier or Gucci sunglasses are ending up on John Harbaugh or Jim Harbaugh? Like 100%. Like I'm picturing Mike McDaniel's glasses ending up on, like, at the podium, the postgame podium. Like,
I think you're right about that.
I think there's a way for that to work really, like, really well, but I also think there's a way for it to go spectacularly to pieces.
Yes.
I don't think there's a middle ground there.
You said it better than I could. Let's take a break. When we come back, speaking about the NFL and people knowing ball, Mina Kimes is going to join us. That's next here on The Score.
The next guest is an Emmy-nominated NFL analyst, journalist, and podcast host, you know from her work on ESPN's NFL Live. Her podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, is available on all platforms. Please welcome to the show, Mina Kimes, everybody.
I'm Pablo Torre, and Pablo Torre finds out.
I'm Mina.
Hello.
Around the horn. Let's go.
Mina, you are the greatest crossword puzzler that we know.
The Rewatchables is brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. She works for ESPN, does football. Mina Kimes. First time in a while, first one in person. You'll do this again with us
an
at some
honor
point.
To talk about.
Did you have fun?
The goat. Oh my God. You texted me, do you like it's complicated? Nancy Myers, and I was like, this is the moment I've been waiting my whole life for.
I know. It's really, really exciting when you get one of those texts.
She's an NFL analyst on ESPN. I can tell from simply the look on her face. She does not want to in on this conversation.
I just went through the game tape of Mina on Jeopardy.
Let me say this to you. I want to applaud you, you know, not just for your brilliance,
but for your bravery, because it was me. I would never show up on Jeopardy unless I was hosting. I would never even think to be somebody trying to answer them damn questions. I don't give a damn what it is.
She's a journalist, currently working as an NFL analyst at ESPN. Here's Mina Hyams.
Representing the purple and gold, an Alaskan Malamute named Dubs is the live mascot of this Seattle University's sports teams. Mina.
University of Washington. What is the University of Washington?
That's correct.
I had to get that one.
Don't forget your phrasing. 19,400 makes you tonight's Jeopardy champion, and it puts you in the semifinals.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Hearing Mina describe on Pablo's podcast on the mechanism to buzz in gave me anxiety.
So much anxiety.
Yes, because I would have been exactly the same way that she was in talking about it. It's a Spiegel and Holmes show. Carmi V is in for Spiegs today. And she's like, well, why don't we talk with Mina about the Bears and about the NFL? So we bring Mina onto the show on the Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Mina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. That was honestly the longest intro about myself I've ever listened to. So I really enjoyed reliving some of those highlights.
Well, our guy Chris Tannehill is the best in the business, and he loves to bring people out in a great way. And thank you for joining us. But first things first, how would you describe Caleb Williams' season this year?
Fireworks, I think, is the word that comes to mind. I mean, some of the biggest, most impressive high leverage moments of the entire, not just NFL season, but postseason. You certainly saw the talent that led to him being drafted first overall. I think you saw the progress as a Bears fan that you were hoping for with the investments they made, both in the offense and also the head coach. And I think the arrow is pointing up, so you have to be excited. Obviously, there's things he has to work on. Him and Ben both know that. But for a year or two, I think it's a pretty exciting time to be a Bears fan.
The city has just been so electric throughout the postseason. Something, you know, they outperformed any and all expectations, I think, that anyone could have possibly had this year. But so much of it, I always point back to, Mina, is about this offensive line and how much Ben prioritizes that. The Bears are now looking at, all right, the left tackle spot is the... that's the weakness at this point. Is it something they need to prioritize, or because four of the five spots are great, do you think that this offense can still ride this into a year to another year under Ben Johnson where they're improving?
It's a great question, and obviously kind of came to a head with the injuries. I think it's something you'd want to see them address while also, you know, keeping one of the guys at least that they already have. But I also think there are just bigger needs on this team that need to be addressed. If you're thinking about your first round or, you know, where you really want to spend money in draft picks, I do think I would focus on the defense, particularly the pass rush, more so than that. But, you know, it all depends on how the draft shakes out and is available.
Mina, I figured that Ben Johnson would have an impact. I didn't think it would be this. From people that you talk to from around the NFL and your own scouting of it, why do you think this worked so well with Ben Johnson in year one?
Because he's a great offensive coach. I mean, this was a hire that, and you guys know this from being local, but just nationally, I don't think I heard a single person say it was a bad hire, right? Like, I was pretty universally loved, along with Mike Vrabel, and then surprise, surprise, they end up doing an awesome job. Sometimes the obvious thing is the smart thing. You know, that's how I felt about Ben Johnson. Sometimes, all right, the guy who called, you know, one of the most innovative and successful offensive coaches of the last few years, wow, turned out he was just as innovative and successful in Chicago. So, you know, but I think the thing you never know, guys, is how well someone can manage an entire team, how well someone can manage in-game, overcome adversity, the CEO parts of being the head coach, and obviously he hit that out of the park as well.
Yeah, isn't that Occam's razor is the most obvious, like, choice is probably the right one. All right, I want to get to some stuff this weekend also, because as excited as we are in Chicago, the playoffs are over for the Bears for right now. Their season is over, but there are four teams still playing. And it's something that was brought up with actually another guest we had on, where the Broncos-Pats game is so interesting to me, not because I think it's going to be better than we'll get to the Seahawks, I promise. But how much of a difference does it make that Jarrett Stidham is starting over Bo Nix, given who Bo Nix is to this team and how this team is built? Does it matter as much as maybe, I don't know, I feel like a key defensive injury might have been more catastrophic for the Broncos.
Yeah, you know, it matters a lot because it's the quarterback position, but I do think it's less than, I don't know, if like Drew Lock had to start for Sam Darnold, you know, and maybe that's not a good comparison, but because I do think, like, schematically, it's going to be pretty similar. Mm-hmm. I think from what I've seen of Jarrett Stidham and, like, everyone else, I've spent the last few days grinding Jarrett Stidham's tape.
God bless us, everyone.
I know, right? He's a capable NFL backup, man. Like, he's accurate. He's reasonably athletic. I think he can throw the ball deep. I think where you worry is two things. Bo is really good at avoiding negative plays, sacks, mm-hmm. turnovers. And I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being a difference. Mm. And then, you know, Bo's athleticism, they use him as part of the designed run game, and I don't think that we're going to see that with Jarrett Stidham. So I'm not going to tell you that it's not a downgrade, but I don't think it's like a massive, like, game, you know, like world-changing, like going from, like, sure to win, no chance kind of situation.
As you can imagine, here in Chicago, we're paying attention to the other quarterbacks from Caleb's draft class. And there's some compare and contrast. How did Drake May go from having a solid rookie season to then going to an MVP candidate season in year two?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a few things that factor into this. You know, I was really impressed by him, his rookie season. I'll start there. Really terrible, terrible circumstances. And I thought, despite that, he was very impressive with his decision-making and some of the plays he made, honestly, under pressure were just remarkable. So the Patriots improving those circumstances really set the table for him to take another leap in year two. I don't think he's playing with a group of world beaters, and that factored into my MVP vote. But I do think Stephon Diggs and Kayshon Boutte have been really impressive and important to this offense, as you saw last week. And then the offensive line, the rookie left tackle might be struggling in the postseason, but the rest of the offensive line has been playing pretty well. And then you throw on top of that, Josh McDaniels is a very good play caller. So I just think, yeah, he's not playing on, like, the Monstars or whatever, but everything around him has improved, and that coupled with the fact that he was already kind of an ascending player has led us to this moment.
I want to talk to you then now about the Seattle Seahawks season, because going into this year, I think there was a lot of question marks as to what they were even doing. When you look at last offseason, the departures they had, the pickups they had, you get Sam Darnold and you think, all right, is he actually fixed or was that just Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota? It was very unclear what the Seahawks were doing, and it all just kind of worked. And now they look like the most complete team in the conference, if not the most complete team in the league. I have a feeling they are just going to run through the Rams. You probably don't want to hear that. But what has this season been like for you as a Seahawks fan to see the maturation in year two under Mike Macdonald?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of fun to watch. And it starts with the defense, right? Mm-hmm. This is a defense-led team. They have the best league defense, arguably in the NFL, certainly left in the postseason. And it is reminiscent of those Legion of Boom years, yep, where you would be watching this team and you'd be almost excited when the defense took the field because they were so dominant. And I think the way I would characterize it when you think about, like, okay, how'd they get here? Well, last season they finished 10th in DVOA. So this is already a unit on the rise in Mike Macdonald, who, by the way, has now done this in two places, in both Baltimore and Seattle, going from – this is the thing I think people really forget, and I made this case when I was talking about why I voted for Mike for Coach of the Year. The defense was very bad in 2023. I know people have, like, you know, memories of Pete Carroll and these great defenses. Near the end of his tenure there, this was a defense that really struggled. And – for him to turn it around so quickly, some of it has to do with the players they've added, no doubt. And they've obviously spent some high draft picks on defense that have all hit. But I think he's just done a remarkable job on that side of the ball, and that's the biggest reason why they are what they are.
This is kind of like the Mina Bowl, because obviously she's a 12, but she also worked for the Rams as a commentator.
Lives in L.A., yeah.
And so look, we have watched Ben Johnson do some cool stuff in 13 personnel, and one of the biggest moments that the Bears had was a touchdown pass to DJ Moore out of 13 personnel. Sean McVay has changed his whole profile as a coach, as a guy that was running out of 11. And now he's doing crazy stuff out of 13.
Except against the Bears, apparently, last week.
Except against the Bears. So I'd love to know, like, he's so good at this. How is it that the adaptation that he seems to be able to have, where you can flip a switch and go from being a primary 11 team to using 13 30% of the time in being successful?
Yeah, it's funny, you guys, though, because, like, in the playoffs, he's kind of dialed that back with Devontae Adams. Yeah, so, like, but going back and rewatching Week 16, it was something that they leaned on pretty heavily. They weren't super successful doing so. Seattle, of course, is very unique in that because they have two very physical defensive backs who are both kind of hybrid slots in Witherspoon and Eamon Worry. They're able to defend the run versus, you know, when teams put multiple tight ends or running backs on the field in a way most teams cannot. I think it's what the Bears would probably like to be with Gordon at some point. So they're unique. The Rams are unique, and I think that's what makes this matchup so interesting, sort of the chess match from a personnel perspective between both coaches.
All right, real quick, I have to get to this before we let you go. What are we about to see on the Great British Baking American Baking Show? Excuse me. Mina, I've been waiting for this since you told me that it was happening, and I'm so excited for you. What are we in for? Also, you were the last person to, like, get Prue as a judge. She retired.
I know. R.I.P. I don't know why I said that. That was so weird. End of an era. My addled brain went. Yeah, so it was so much fun. I got to go to London for a few days to tape that, and I competed with Julian Edelman, Antonio Gates, and Von Miller. And I won't spoil it, but one of them practiced a lot and even hired a coach, and it really shows. And you guys can speculate as to who. I won't tell you.
Oh, what a tease. Okay, I love that.
It's a great tease.
It's like she does this for, like, a living or something. It's
so
like,
wait,
she's a host.
Our guy Spice isn't hosting that, is he?
Declare the host dead, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mina, we appreciate you spending some time with us. We know that you got to get to wherever it is that you're trying to go, but thanks for picking up the phone and hanging out with us and talking ball.
Great times talking to you guys. Have a great day.
All right. Bye, you too, Mina.
That is Mina Kimes. That was fun.
That was so fun. I cannot wait. She told me this last summer that she was going to be on this because she was flying to London and to tape it. And I didn't know anything else other than she was doing it. And I was just, it's my dream to go and be in the tent, like, ever. I've never been more envious, but it couldn't have happened to a better person.
Well, I love that you have some of this stuff. So, like, it adds something a little extra to what we will often call, and you can see it right now, the boy aquarium over there.
Like, it is a boy aquarium.
The fact that, like, I went to go get some water and I come back and you and Layla are talking about the UDA competition.
Yeah.
The fact that you have this, you know, homemaker in you that you bring to the airwaves when we're on and getting excited about this, I think is great.
Yeah, also, Mina's selling herself short too, because she practiced and she was telling us, she's like, yeah, my friend helped me out. I'm like, you can say your friend is David Chang.
Oh,
you can say your friend is David Chang.
Oh, that's someone that could really help
and
you.
And so she made a cake for this housewarming party we were at and for her, and it was phenomenal. And she was like, she was really proud of it, rightfully so. So she was very prepared going in. She's very prepared for everything, including NFL analysts. And that's why she's one of the best.
Yeah. And Spice did used to host this show.
I think he still is. I think the Great American Baking Show, because it's like that version of it, it's the celebrity version. And I think he's hosting it.
We should
figure it out.
Yeah, I should just text Spice
and ask him. That is a fun crew. You're talking about Von Miller, Julian Edelman, Antonio Gaines.
Yeah.
I can't wait to find out who's the one that prepped for it.
Uh-huh.
I can't wait.
I can't wait either. Coach Wanstead's going to join us at 5 o'clock. When we come back, should Max Crosby be a Bear at any cost? We'll talk about it next here on The Score.
As it gets noisy here at Allegiant Stadium, DeAndre Swift lines up bottom of your picture on third and goal. Play clock down to one. Williams batted up in the air, and it is picked. Crosby. He has been a beast at the start. 19 on the return, and the Raiders' defense answers yet again.
Max Crosby was sniffing out smoke routes like you would not believe against the Bears in that game. He could have had two other picks in that game. He's so fast off the snap. He's a long-armed player that is out there causing havoc. So it's...
He's a psycho.
He
compliment.
Is. He is. Total compliment.
Yes.
And the type of Which guy that fits, you would love to have on your team.
I was going
to
say, fits with this team, fits with this team's identity under Ben Johnson.
And it fits a need.
100%. That's the most important.
They need someone that can help them because, like most people, Dennis Allen would love to be able to mess with offenses knowing that he's getting pressure from a front four, mm-hmm. and that allows you to do all sorts of stuff in the back seven.
And not just blitz Matthew Stafford for half of the time, half of the defensive snaps.
Yeah, like you can do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, so, yeah, you can.
So to get him, though, it's going to cost you.
100, yes.
But we do know this. As the season went on, it wasn't just the game that he played against Caleb. Max Crosby was paying attention to what was going on with Caleb, and he seems to like what he saw.
All right, last game was Rams-Bears.
Nuts. Another. I still can't get over that throw, bro. That was one of the craziest. I couldn't believe my eyes, bro. I was sitting there in silence like, what the? When he started sprinting
Caleb
direct,
should get his own shoe.
Bro, when he started sprinting directly back, I'm like, it's over. And this threw it from the 40. Over the DBs, that was one of the craziest plays I've seen ever, literally.
Are you surprised that he didn't try and go for two in that situation?
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, but I low-key in the back of my head, I was like, is this the best situation?
He's the one.
Especially after that much of a heartbreak, like you make that type of play, yeah. Let's go for the game.
Yeah.
You know he's got
put Caleb on the move and let's see what happens. I would have, that would have been insane, but honestly, like, in that situation, I think everybody kicks it there. Like, I would have kicked it there as a coach. I mean, you can't put all the whole season on the line for one play. Like, you guys have been playing – we've been playing good defense all game. You know what I mean? Like, you got to look at it from that lens. Like, they've been playing good-ass defense. They got to stop out the half – you know, out the beginning of the OT. Like, they had their opportunities. It just fell a little bit short, bro.
They were all surprised by this.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's got their nails painted, like they're all bought into it. Imagine what happens next.
They're carrying matches into the games.
Yep. It's gonna be
insane. What world are we in?
All right.
What
world are we in?
I love the world that we're in.
I know. Hey, self-care, gentlemen.
It's important.
Get that matcha latte. Get your nails done. I'm taking Dave for a pedicure tomorrow.
Oh yeah? Has he ever had one?
Yeah, he has.
Oh, okay. Good for him. Treat yourself. Freddie Gibbs, when he was on, he showed us his nails because he had just gotten his nails done and he was talking about Caleb. So that was pretty cool. But Max would, you'd have to give up a lot. And if I felt like when Ryan Poles was talking about it yesterday, I felt like it was like, hey, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do anything like crazy.
Right.
Now, of course, that could be a smokescreen, but I will say this about Ryan Poles. He doesn't seem capable of lying. Like, he'd almost rather not talk than lie to you.
He keeps everything very close to the vest, and I think that's on purpose because, I don't think he's a very good liar. Yeah. And I do think that, I mean, Ben Johnson has been very transparent this entire season, and I appreciate that. It would be really hard to get Max Crosby. You would have to, not only would it be hard monetarily, and again, there's creative accounting, as Cynthia Freeland likes to put it. And it's true. You can make the money work. My issue would also be leveraging the future, mortgaging the future on one player. And I don't know that that's with how successful Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles' first draft together was. Do you really want to give up picks? Do you really want to handicap yourself or hamstring yourself in the future with the cap space you have available and this, that, the other to go get admittedly a world beater that would instantaneously make your team just dominant? That defense would be dominant. It would be like the Packers getting Micah and what they gave up for him. And I don't know if that's at this stage, if that's what you want to do.
Would you have gone for two? Because I would have.
Would you have?
Mm-hmm. I said it in the group chat before the Bears got the ball. I was like, hey, did you get off the field, get the ball back, and go for two?
In the press box, we were all wondering if, and we wondered it before. Honestly, there wasn't a whole lot of conversation after that insane catch.
So look, I actually think that played a role in it. I actually think that it was so bananas and so crazy
that like you were just kind of paralyzed by like, and you just like did what you were supposed to do because you couldn't even think straight. No. And that's such a great example, that clip of Max Crosby going like, I was silent, because that's, I said, I don't know where I said this, but after it happened, it was on the show where I was like, that is something that shouldn't be allowed within the laws of physics. That is something that even NFL players are going to look at and say, how in the hell did he do that? Like, it is not so, like the wow plays from Caleb are so far beyond like flashes from anyone else. It's just again, like bending the laws of physics to make it work, and he makes it work. Like, I don't know how the trajectory of that ball worked. I don't know how it worked. I don't know how it fell directly into Cole Kmet's lap. I especially when he's hand fighting in the end zone, and we were all thinking that he was going to have to go towards the center of the end zone, and we're like, there's no one there. And then you see Cole, and I don't know how that ball got there. I digress. It's really hard to, especially because you're also thinking, all right, if Caleb continues this trajectory, you're going to have to lock him up sooner rather than later.
Yep. That's a great problem to have, except for the fact that you're trying to team build with a guy on a rookie contract. And that's where you want to try and win as soon as possible and then keep stacking. And then 8 years down the line, things fall apart, like with the Kansas City Chiefs. But there's three championships in there before things fall apart.
And that's what you sign up for.
That's 100%. We need to take a break. When we come back, Coach Wani is going to join us. We will ask him to wrap up the season for us and get his thoughts on the playoffs. That's next. Carmi V is in for Spiegs. It's the Spiegel and Holmes Show here on The Score.
We're Spiegs.